guys.
Good morning.
I was going to start with a prayer too, so we've done that. I thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Going to talk about finances this morning and godly finances, and I thank you for asking me to do that. For those of you who don't know me or don't know what I do, I'm an accountant, and so I make my living tracking money, stretching money, saying no to things. I work for a not-for-profit corporation, so things are kind of tight. And I was born a tightwad. Is that term still used these days?
By us it is.
Skinflint. You know, my mom used to say if I closed my eyes, my toes would curl up. Because I'd get my allowance and, you know, I'd have it. We'd go to the movies and Dad would give us a couple bucks for popcorn and I'd leave with that $2 in my pocket instead of, you know, hey, opportunity cost here. So I have a natural bent towards saving money and stretching money and that kind of thing. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. And I know that there are a lot of people with a different natural bent. They have other gifts and that kind of thing. And I'm glad they're part of this body and part of this country, because really, if everybody was like me, we would not have the economy we do, you know. But I've learned a lot of things from the church to help check my attitude toward money. You know, if you're a tightwad, money can become too important. And there's a balance there. And we talked about balance a couple weeks ago with time and things like that, and priorities. So anyway, just give you that little bit of background. And when I was first asked to talk about finances, what excited me was, you know, oh, we can talk about dollar cost averaging and whole life versus term insurance and fixed rate financing or not. And because that's kind of a hobby of mine. I have to make those decisions for my family. So kind of keeping up with that stuff and making those decisions is just something that I do. I read those articles on investing and that kind of stuff. And thought we would share that, and we could get into some of that this morning, tools to help you guys. And then I realized that would really be missing the mark. And because in the Bible, finances, let me put it this way. If you think of it like sport, finances like sport, you have a mental game and a physical game. If you guys have ever heard Tiger Woods talk about his golf game, and how so much of it is mental, and his focus, and his attitude, that's when he's really on his game. And he spends so much time practicing the physical part of his game, so he can hit the ball straight, and he can hit the ball further, but it's the mental part of his game that sets him apart. And some of the Rams players are being quoted this year about, and I can't remember which one, but he said 70% of football is mental, attitude, intensity. 30% is physical, and they spend all this time practicing the physical part of their game, get the plays right and all, and that's part of the discipline. But even these guys are saying, with that sport, it's the mental part of the game. And with a Yogi Berra who said for baseball, 50% of the game is 90% mental, or some kind of goofy quote like that. But his point was, hey, you know, the mental part of the game is important. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that God's perspective on finances is attitude that is everything. You can have two people doing the same thing, and one is sin and one is not, with attitude. And that applies to more than just finances. But if finances is sport, it is the mental part of your game that matters to God, not the physical part. And so that's what I want us to talk about today. And it might be a lot of review, but that's okay. I get a lot out of classes that are just review and reminders. And so feel free to ask questions or stop me and interrupt or challenge some points as we go through. We'll keep things open today. I wanted to start with a scripture in 1 Timothy. Don Fitz taught a class on finances years ago that I wasn't able to attend. It was a Sunday morning class, and he had one scripture for that class. And I remember that point. And it was 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. Godliness plus contentment is great gain. And so that section is kind of talking about finances there, and it's that contentment part is the attitude part. Godliness plus contentment is great gain. And if there's nothing else we leave with today, let's not forget that. And what is the contentment? Let's see, I think this section here, verse 8, right after that. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. And that's not a very high standard. It's not how much you have. It's the contentment. When you guys think about contentment, godliness plus contentment is great gain. What is that contentment? Is it, well, let's just kind of elaborate on that a little bit. What are you thinking of? What is the contentment? Is it, well, I won't put words in your mouth, but
I think it's with being happy with where you're at.
With where you're at?
Yeah.
There you go. Anything else?
I already mentioned in the class how they did some kind of study where they interviewed rich people down to the people in welfare. Everybody wanted 20% more. Didn't matter where you were at, people thought if I had this 20% more, I'd be content. And so they're not content with what they've got. It's got to be 20%. And that was including the rich man. So.
I can verify that. I mean, that's my mindset. I want more, and I'm driven for more. What do I want more for? That motive, that attitude. You know, and we'll expound on that a little bit more. But that contentment is really important. I also wanted to read this other passage to you guys that talks about this. And I'm going to be in Luke chapter 18. And I'm going to start in verse 9. You guys might remember this parable. The two guys in the temple. This is Jesus talking. And he also told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Ooh, yes, right? The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, God be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. Now that talks about a lot more than just money, okay? But the attitude. The one guy had the physical game going, didn't he? Fasting, tithing. And the other guy didn't. But his attitude was right before God. And so, you know, when we talk about financing, it's the attitude that's so important. Now, the guy who had the right attitude had to leave from the temple and change his physical game. Okay? Let's not forget that. But what was important, what was central, was his attitude. So, that's where I like us to focus on. So before we talk about attitude specifics, I wanted to challenge our perspective a little bit on who we are and our money situation. Matthew chapter 17 has a story in it that is really important to me and my finances. Verse 24. Listen to this. Every time I tithe, I think about this story, and it really helps my attitude. When they came to Capernaum, those who collected the 2 drachma tax came to Peter and said, "Does your teacher not pay the 2 drachma tax?" He said, "Yes." And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to him first, saying, What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of earth collect customs or poll tax? From their sons or from strangers? When Peter said from strangers, Jesus said to him, then the sons are exempt. However, so that we do not offend them, go to the sea and throw in a hook and take the first fish that comes up. And when you open its mouth, you will find a shekel. Take that and give it to them for you and me. And that is a pretty remarkable story. And a shekel is 4 drachma, so it was just the right amount to pay the tax. And what that helps my perspective with, well, let me just ask this. Did Peter earn the money for the tax? There's one no. Anybody else? Did Peter earn the money? What?
Other than lowering the hook.
Okay. Did he earn the money? He did some work. He was obedient.
He did what he was told to do.
He did what he was told to do.
And it was up to the person giving those instructions to assign the value to what he did.
Okay. Could have been 1,000,000 drachma coin in there. There was such a thing, right? There was enough to provide his need. And I think if Peter would have come away from that event thinking, I earned this, and, you know, maybe bitter about having to pay the tax with it or whatever, how sad and how wrong that would have been. He did not earn that money, but he did obey. He did some work. A lot of circumstances beyond his control came together to allow that need to be met, even though he had a part of it. And so when you think about that paycheck you get from whatever source, did you earn that money? I think it's real parallel to Peter here. We work for that paycheck, and we obey. You know, God calls us to work and to provide for our families, but are we earning that? Did we do everything that it took to make that come about? You know, for our culture in this country, our economy is massive, complex. I mean, nobody's got their hands around it. Greenspan looked really good for a while. You know, if you follow that stuff he does, and trying to keep it from eating up too much and all that. But nobody put all this together, this economy. And there's work out there for us to do and to go find it. And we got a lot of freedom on what that work is. And we are called to do that work. But, you know, we're not earning all that we get. And so that really helps our attitude, our perspective, if we realize that. We no more earn our paycheck than Peter did. And I just can't emphasize that enough. And read this story in Matthew 17 as often as you need to. But I really like it. It really helps me remember that. The other thing on our perspective is just think about our place as a country in the world. And we're about 5% of the world's population. I don't know how much wealth of the world percentage we have. Maybe it's 25%, something like that. I mean, we've got it really good. Even the poorest in our nation have way more than so much more of the world. And isn't the world perspective God's perspective? I mean, he created all of us, cares for all of us. And let's not forget where we are. You know, it's just so easy to get caught up in this culture and in our lifestyles and comparing ourselves to each other. But just step back and think about the world. Man, we got it good. And not having it too good in this society has it pretty good compared to a lot of the world. And that perspective should really help us with our attitude. So, I hope that helps. Finally, just remembering that we are forgiven. You know, it's so easy to get caught up in money and the importance and financial burdens, paying bills. The fact that we're forgiven, looking forward to heaven, doesn't that put our financial stuff in perspective? So if we don't earn everything we get, and we are among the elite wealthy, when you think about the world, and we are forgiven, if that's our perspective, how easy should it be to have the right attitude and obey with our finances? Okay. I wanted us to start there. You guys, anybody want to elaborate things that you remember that help your perspective or things like that? I used to, I'm pretty conservative politically, and used to not like the stories about all that we give, you know, foreign aid and things like that. But I'm way more comfortable with it now than I used to be when I realized, you know, what do you think our role is as a nation and as a Christian nation, you know, in the world? And do we give away everything? You know, I mean, no. But, you know, the fact that we do that, go ahead.
Hey, we can look at that point now. Yeah, but, yeah, you guys have been out to me. It's up to you to do this. And I personally don't think you can do the giveaway, but you can give it everything. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't think we need to do the police force in the world. I mean, I don't think we need to do it either. Now, back in America, some Indian tribes believe, you know, the thing we ever give away the most was that when they upset us, you give away the most, you are that, you know, highest as far as social standards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, this isn't to put a guilt trip on us or anything, it's just to realize where we are, who we are here. That'll help us do the right thing.
And in a lot of ways it's relative.
Yeah.
I do live in the wealthiest nation. Because of that, I have a mortgage that's a lot more than those live in Haiti.
That's right. And our culture demands effort, work, independence. I mean, you know, there's, and we are to be in the world, not of the world. So there's, you know, I have to function here, but I ought to be different. And so, yeah, go ahead.
Maybe that's just clear. Attitude truly matters. I remember that when I was living in Malibu, California, I found it just really difficult to live there. And the reason I found it difficult to live there was because we have so much wealth, and I felt like the poorest of poor, even though I was earning a very, very decent wage. And so for me, it was bad for me personally to be in that environment, to live there at that time in my life. And so I had to move out, and I did. I moved out into a neighborhood where, it was more normal. But the point being, though, is that if we surround ourselves with, and it doesn't have to be necessarily our immediate circumstances, it's kind of like our peer group, what we at least identify as our peer group. If we surround ourselves with a certain level of expectation in terms of luxury, in terms of, you know, whatever, all the things, then those are the things that we begin to expect. And it may be that we need to adopt that humble, that poor in spirit mindset, and to, not necessarily to move into the ghetto, but at least to place ourselves occasionally. occasionally in environments, like whether it's going on trips, missionary trips, to very poor countries or very poor regions of the city or whatever, so that we can then maintain a much more realistic perspective on how much God has given us and how much we should give. Because it was hard for me to give anything when I lived in Malibu. But by taking myself out of that environment, I found myself able to do it.
That one kind of, you see that in our kids nowadays, because children have much greater expectations of what's normal than what we did. You know, they think, well, you have to have these things, you know, just to survive in life. You know? So it's gone way beyond shelter, food, clothing.
Yeah.
The teenage generation is a little bit worse.
So, getting back to attitude. I wanted to share a couple of points for you to take with you that work for me. And I think we can say our attitude is right in finances for God if we have two things. One is God gets the first fruits. I think that's so central throughout the Word, Old Testament, New Testament. God gets the first fruits, and money is a tool. It's not our security. It's not our self-worth. It's not an end in and of itself, you know, working toward retirement. Money is a tool. It's just something that helps me serve God. And you got lots of freedom in that range of both of those things. But if God is getting your first fruits and dollars are a tool, then I think you have a right attitude before God. That mental part of your financial game is going to be on. And so then the physical part, you can spend as much time or as little or, you know, whatever to polish that as you want. But if you've got those two things, and that's what I wanted us to have today. So let's examine both of those things. The first fruits. How do you give the first fruits to God? And I think you have to look at the tithe, the giving to the church. I think that's the physical part of that attitude. And I'm kind of talking in circles, in a way, with the physical and the mental part of the game, but, yeah.
I kind of get a negative connotation when I hear tithes, just because of how I was brought up. I've been in lots of different churches where some say, tithing, you will tithe, and it is God's commanding to tithe, and then I've been in other churches where it says, do not tithe. It is, you know, it is the new law has overridden that, and I think of tithe as giving what you have set in part in your heart, and then I think of it as 10% or 20%, and I have very negative connotations toward that word, and I really do, and that's why I want to know what your take on that word.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. Is there another way to say that? Because what we're talking about is the setting aside for the church. That's what I'm talking about when I say tithe, and it is an Old Testament term, and there's a lot of baggage hanging on it. That is very true. Is there another way to say it? Anybody?
Just take it out of it as giving your first fruits.
Giving first fruits. There you go.
Does anybody else think of a percentage, though? I mean, is it a percentage?
Well, I think what you're saying is true in the sense that tithe means 10%.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't like it either.
I don't like it.
Because I, in my opinion, that, you know, if you're going to follow that, that's the law of the Old Testament as well.
Yeah.
Okay. We must bring along the rest of the law.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about God,
it's everything.
Somebody, and you know, again, it just seems like somebody could be given 1%, and God's saying, man, that's incredible, they're getting 1%, and then somebody else could be given 50%, and they're doing it grudgingly.
Like you did say that, yeah, to the widow, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. There, okay, you guys are getting right ahead of me here, this is
that's
great.
That's why I don't like that word tithe just kind of runs me along, too.
I think the concept of...
It really runs all over me, I think.
Concept of, you know, I guess, I mean, one time we had a series here years ago, and the emphasis was giving from a happy heart. The Greek word was giving hysterically.
Right.
But I thought, well, that's fine. I can give a little bit of money and really be happy about that. But I thought giving sacrificially, I think, is the key.
Let's look at a couple things. In the Old Testament, the
there's a lot about first fruits. It's unblemished. It's the best lambs, the first part of the harvest, that kind of thing. And it was basically 10%. Actually, it's a lot more than that. And I didn't look up a lot of scriptures. But if you look at all the sacrifices and the offerings and all of that they were doing, and I know that that was really part of their taxes to their government, if you will, the Israelite nation and that kind of thing, and support of the clergy, and as well as the poor. A lot of it was used for those ways. So the parallel to just supporting our congregation, you know, you could talk about. But still, this concept of first fruit, the unblemished, the best, basically 10% is the Old Testament law. Now, in the New Testament, our standard is Jesus looking at the widow who puts in two mites and lifting her up before his disciples, saying, look at this. And the point there is it is from her substance, not from her abundance. Not that everybody has to give everything, but he lifted that up as an example because it was substance, not just from abundance. And the other part of the New Testament is in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, it talks about each must do as he has purposed in his heart. And God loves a cheerful giver. And so being deliberate is part of the New Testament standard. And the attitude of cheerfulness is part of the New Testament standard. And that is about first fruits. Now for me, you know, that gives you a lot of freedom too. It's not just 10%, above or below. And that's what that standard, that part of what you have purposed in your heart and what you can do cheerfully. It's not a fixed percentage. Let me make this point too. Look at the standard of adultery in the Old versus New Testament as well. In the Old Testament, adultery was the physical act, and that was wrong. In the New Testament, Jesus says if you look at a woman lustfully, you have committed adultery in your heart. It is that attitude that matters. And it's a lot higher standard. And so that's just another example of a difference. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't have a negative connotation with tithing because when I look at the Old Testament, that is instruction for us. And so the instruction behind tithing is that it was the minimum standard. It was the minimum 10%. And what Christ comes along and does, he says, you have to reach higher than that. He doesn't put a number on it because you can't put a number on it. You have to go beyond that.
Right.
And that to me is what's really critical. And if we don't have a heart that goes beyond a 10% rule, then we're erring.
Right. Let me tell you how I give first fruits. It's got to be your first check that we write when I get paid. And I used to have to put something in the basket every week because I didn't want everybody around me to see the basket going by and I'm not giving. And I've been able to let go of that and realize I get paid every 2 weeks. So I just give the church every 2 weeks. Other people do it monthly. Some people have it electronically transferred to the church account. They're never putting anything in the basket. Okay? So, A, we can't judge each other. And I used to be there. Yeah, I was concerned about how it looked when I didn't put something in, okay? So we can let go of that. My dad used to put about $20 in the collection plate. So that was kind of my concept of first fruits or tithing growing up. And with what he probably made $30,000 when I was a kid a year. And so that's like 20 bucks a week is like 3% of his income. But it was deliberate. It was every week. It was planned. So I taught that part. So in my giving of first fruits, I started out in college probably giving about $5 a week. Oh, I was poor. The church had a lot more money than I did. But I gave something every week, okay? But it wasn't nearly much of a percentage. And I, you know, full-time classes, part-time work, put myself through school. But that was where I was. Then, as I became a Christian in the middle of college and started realizing the standard and the 10% in the Old Testament and that kind of thing, I started giving 10% net in total. Now what I mean by that is, you know, the church might get 5% of my take-home pay, and I might give to some charities, United Way. I mean, of that added up to that 10% net. Okay? Well, then, a little more time as a Christian, a little more realization of how priceless my salvation is and how important the body is, I started giving 10% net just to the church. And then the other stuff I would give was on top of that. Christian Family Services, you know, Camp Nietes, those kind of charities, United Way. So then I moved on to 10% gross to the church. And the other stuff was on top of that. Okay? And I just wanted you to see this continuum, and the 10% helps me a whole lot because it is substantial. It is substance. And as an accountant, I mean, I want some benchmarks and guidelines. You can see how I've played with that in my heart and what I'm doing with it. And this is where I am today. And the next step is going to be letting go of this 10% benchmark in my mind and my ability. And what's it going to take for me to move beyond that? I don't know. Maybe it's when push comes to shove, I'm getting a building, you know. And, hey, the body needs this, and I think it's a good thing. I don't know. And there is more beyond this, but I just wanted to give you the reality. And where you are on this continuum, I don't know. And if your mental game is right, you are fine where you are. I want to give you that too. But I want us to keep stretching. And it's not because it makes us a better person. I mean, we're all forgiven as the grace before God. But, you know, how much more can the church do? And how much, you know, is it good for us to keep moving on this scale? And I wanted to just lay that out before you guys. You can find yourself on this continuum.
Something that I think one of the things my parents taught me was then what you do, and whether it's the 90% or whatever that number is, what you do with that is oftentimes built on, and it's also oftentimes spent on other things, a car, clothes, the house, or whatever. And God cares about what you do with those other things as well. And I remember the Sunday school teacher I had who made a point to say, you know, there was somebody who had a fire at their house, and, you know, if anybody has clothes that are this size, you know, you might donate them. And she made a point to say, and don't donate the ones that are old and worn out that you would not wear anyway, but, you know, give them, this is a kid or kids who, you know, lost their clothes in a house fire. They don't want to wear your leftovers any more than you do, and so that first fruits of all the things that were left over, being able to open your home up and not give your money, but don't come and mess my carpet up kind of thing. You know, that I think my parents taught me that very well, that what we do with the rest of the things that we spend our money on, God cares about that as well.
Yeah. And you could be anywhere on this continuum and be wrong, like the Pharisee in the temple. Okay, don't get me wrong about this is your standard. You know, the attitude is what's important to God. And as we grow and mature, you know, this is the way I thought about it, and I hope that helps. The second point, we'll take the last 5 minutes with, is that money is a tool. And there's a lot of different ways to say this. You can say, store up your treasures in heaven, not on earth. You can say, people are more important than things. You know, the house that you buy could be nice. Somebody spills grape juice on your carpet, and you have a grudge against them for however long. You know, people are more important than things. You could say stewardship. That's another way of saying money is a tool, and that attitude part of your financial game. So how do you do this? And I think your attitude of money is a tool comes down to living below your means. God gets the first fruits, I think, is about the tithing or the, you know, the giving to the body. Money is a tool if you are living below your means. Now, what does that mean? Okay. Think of your time. Okay. If you scheduled something every minute of every day, is that good use of your time? Or if something comes up, you can't address it. You can't help the neighbor because you're scheduled. You can't stop on the way to church to help the car that's broke down because you got to get, you know, you got no, in your time, you've got to leave some open time. You can't schedule every minute. If you budget and spend every dollar, how can money be a tool? There is no flexibility. There's no movement. And so living below your means is what we're talking about. Now, what does it mean to live below your means? I think, and again, this is gray, we have different standards, just like the giving first fruits. If you're living below your means, if you pay all your bills that arrive every month, okay, you're not paying the minimum on your credit card, you're not paying the minimum on your utility bill so they don't shut it off. You're living below your means if you're paying off those bills that come every month. You don't borrow for any purchases except your house. This is my standard. This is how my house lives. It's my family. We pay cash for cars. We save. Now, financing cars, that's a big purchase. That's not wrong. That's, you know, and if that's part of your financial plan where you're financing that so you can do other things, you know, saving for retirement. I mean, that's part of that physical game I like to figure out. 0% on new cars right now. That might not be a mistake. And so don't get me wrong in saying it's wrong if you finance your car. I borrowed money to get through college. That's a big purchase, okay? But for us, it's only financing a house. And if you like to finance large things, that's fine. But you're not buying a stereo on time payments. You're not any kind of toy or luxury item like that if you're living below your means. I don't know how you can do that. You know, that I think that's the standard. That's what we're talking about. And so if you're not there, and it's hard, and like I said, I'm tight and I'm blessed with a wife who thinks very much like I do financially. And so we have different struggles within our households, okay, to do this. And I respect that and appreciate that dynamic, okay? But this is what we ought to be working for if money is going to be a tool, you know? I want to be one of the guys that when Jesus was going around community to community, he didn't have income. He relied on the people there to provide for him. And I want to be one of those kind of guys, you know, with the church. And I'm saving for retirement, and I know that if money is a tool, there's going to be some people in the body when I get older, and I have money for retirement, and they don't. They didn't do this very well. And part of my role as a Christian is going to be to provide for them. I want to be that guy. And so I'm making plans now. It's, you know, I mean, that's part of this tool. Now, I could be saving for retirement, and my attitude is that's my security, and that's wrong, but you know, I could be doing the right thing and be wrong before God. So, the attitude, money is a tool. Yeah.
I read a book on finance. I can't remember where this is from, but it's something that brings me back into perspective. He talks about the end of the movie Schindler's List and the image of where he suddenly, you know, he's leaving, and then suddenly he realizes that, gosh, this ring could have saved a couple more lives, and you know, my cufflinks could have done this and that, and I, you know, he realizes that all these little things that he still hung on to, even while he was doing good, actually could have saved more lives, you know, and how that kind of impacted him.
Let me leave you with this. I'm willing to talk to anybody about the physical part of their game and that dollar cost averaging and stuff, and there's a good book here, Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey. I skimmed through this. Steve gave it to me. This is pretty good. It's got a lot of good basics and a lot more detail than we went into today. And if you're struggling to have your attitude, the first fruits and the live below your means, you know, money is a tool, I'd love to be there with you. Working on benevolence really helps me a lot. And, you know, I want to make sure you guys don't leave here feeling like you're alone, and how do I get there? You know, and it's not just me in this body that has those gifts and some skill that we're willing to share. If it's not me, I can point you to other people, and we'd be happy to do that. So I hope that helps. Thanks. Thanks.